L'Officine Universelle Bouli presents Ancient Beauty Rituals. Episode 9, Ching Shi, the Pirate Queen. The pirate and genius military commander looks back on her rule over the South China Sea and aims for a final power move, early 19th century. Today was an important day for Ching Shi. The ambitious plan she had seeded decades ago was about to bear sweet fruit. The delicate rice paper stretched over the latticed windows of the mansion softened the harsh morning sun rays streaming into the boudoir. The intricately woven plush carpet, the exquisite silk bedthrow embroidered with silver and gold threads, jade artifacts on the bedside table, and the expensive musky aroma in the room spoke of its inhabitants' wealth and status. The mansion sat atop a hill on Macau's outskirts, overlooking the azure blue ocean and surrounded by beautifully manicured gardens with ornate fountains. Madame Shi, if I may, is it true that you once defeated the Imperial Navy at sea? Asked Zhu, the hairdresser, in a hushed tone, a mix of awe and caution. Zhu loved to narrate her flamboyant employer's adventures to her children back home. The eyes looking back at her through the mirror were proud and fearless. They had seen more than most, and even today, they could instill the fear of God in the bravest of men. Yes, and the navies of the East India Company and the Portuguese. Ching Shi chuckled softly. She had single-handedly changed the notion of what women were capable of doing. Born into the Tanka, or the boat people, an impoverished community of fishermen and petty traders who lived on society's fringes, she had gone on to control the South China coast. Her survival instincts, cunning and charisma had been honed over childhood and youth, spent just trying to stay alive. She closed her eyes and let the memories wash over her. She could smell the sea, hear the crash of the waves, and taste the brine on her lips. She could see herself. She was 15, and the flower boat bobbed gently on a crowded stretch of the Pearl River in Canton, as sounds of drunken laughter and music came in from the saloon on the bow side. Sold by her father at 13 to clear off his debts, the motherless child had grown up on these pleasure boats. Yet even then, she knew that her destiny was immensely more than that of a common prostitute. In a few years, she had moved from servicing customers on a pleasure boat to commanding a fleet of more than 1,500 pirate ships and 80,000 men. She had become the most feared pirate leader across all seas. Now, two decades later and at almost 60, she owned some of Macau's most successful gambling dens. Yet, she was not done. She wanted more. The screech of the serpent-crested eagle swooping in on prey somewhere outside broke through her thoughts. The bird was her favorite, regal, ruthless, and proud. It preyed on serpents and ruled the skies, just as she planned to take over the governor's position and rule the province. In 18th and 19th century Canton in China, amidst the waters of the Pearl River Delta, a low-lying area surrounding the Pearl River estuary, where the river flows into the South China Sea, floated the flower boats, or the pleasure boats, floating brothels that catered to the local populace. Elaborately adorned vessels were part of Chinese culture for hundreds of years. Still, the flower boats in the Pearl River Delta surpassed their predecessors in reputation and fame and became known as the most beautiful boats in the world. There were many variations of these boats, with some being much longer and larger than others. Some of them had elaborate cabin structures with a cupola, extensive upper rooms and a deck. An evening on a Canton flower boat would involve extravagant meals from the floating kitchens on the river, and entertainment by several public singing women, dressed and made up beautifully. While some of the women filled the cups with wine, others sang and played various musical instruments. Experienced women trained novice girls on the boats to memorize numerous poems and songs for the entertainment of their guests. At night, the flower boats were the most brilliantly illuminated and adorned objects along the river, lit up with paper and silk lanterns in colors of the rainbow. The girls wore their prettiest silken robes in oriental colors, heavy with intricate embroideries. Their faces were very artistically painted in white and pink, giving a smooth and soft-looking texture, while delicately traced sharp black crescents marked the eyebrows. "The races will begin in an hour, madame." Qingxi's assistant was at the door of her chamber, gently reminding her of today's appointment and nudging her back to the present. It was the fifth day of the fifth month on the Chinese lunar calendar, the day of the Dragon Boat Festival. This year, many dignitaries, officials, and influential business people would be in attendance, and Qingxi was one of the most significant, a personal acquaintance of the governor. "Zhu, bring me the hand fan box, the one gifted by the governor." Charming her way through the corridors of power was an old skill. But then she was equally reputed for marauding her way through as well. Zhu padded across the room, opening the camphorwood wardrobe door, carefully taking out the expensive box. The lacquered door was finely detailed with carvings, and the faint aroma of camphor hung around the space. It kept insects away. She carefully placed the box at the dressing table, where Qingxi was mentally planning the meeting. Little would the governor suspect that while he was being charmed by her honeyed words, his secretary would be combing through his office, gathering proof of bribes and commissions made on palace supplies. Of course, he would send the information directly to Qingxi. After all, the governor's secretary had been her right-hand man on the Red Fleet, before she had negotiated a job for him with the governor. Helped by Zhu, she proceeded to wear her emerald green silk robe with the gilded copper button knobs. She then opened the ivory box on her dressing table and took out the exquisitely crafted hand fan with its mother-of-pearl handle and sticks of engraved silver, profusely decorated in relief with figures of horseback riders, dragons, boats, and flowers. The accessory was perfectly suitable for today's occasion. Finally, she slipped her feet into the concave-heeled shoes that further added to her imposing height and kept her robe's hemline clean. "You look every inch a queen, madame," Zhu looked at her, awe and admiration in her eyes. As Zhu tucked the last of the loose curls into a pearl and emerald-encrusted hairpin, Qingxi took one appraising look at herself in the mirror before heading for the races. Qingxi, erstwhile pirate queen and current head of Macau's gambling conglomerate, was ready for her next conquest. In 18th century China, fashion was primarily influenced by the imperial trends of the ruling Qing dynasty, 1644 to 1911, characterized by various robe types. Women preferred wide-sleeved long robes made of silks and brocades, heavy with delicate embroidery and motifs. Dressing up for a formal occasion also involved elaborate hairdos, beautiful hair jewellery, and accessories like the hand fan. Carrying a hand fan, which would be a piece of art in itself, was both a status symbol and had a practical use. At times, it also served as an accent to modesty or flirtation for noblewomen. According to a Chinese legend, it had its origin at the Feast of Lanterns when the heat became particularly oppressive. The beautiful daughter of a mandarin took off her mask to fan the air into a gentle breeze. Struck with the grace of the motion, the rest of the fair revelers let their masks fall and followed her example. Hairstyles were exceptionally constructed and elaborate, embellished with flowers and ornaments. Many wore their hair shaped like a swallow's tail at the nape of the neck, like the Han Chinese women. Others wrapped the hair around a centerpiece of wood or ivory that hung out a little over both sides of the head, the signature style of the Manchurian Chinese women. The intricate hairstyles were adorned with bright flowers weaved in a wreath-like structure, sometimes with added ornaments made of jade, gold, or feathers. Aristocratic women of the Qing dynasty generally had a special dressing box or dressing table. There were several types of combing tools, large and small. The crescent comb, 8-character comb, flat needle, squeeze, grate, etc. The Shu Bi comb was one of the most ancient and almost a necessity for all women. Shu's teeth were thick and slightly apart and mainly used for combing hair, while Bi's teeth were fine and dense to remove dirt from the hair. The comb slowly evolved into a hair accessory. The beautifully engraved heads on finely detailed hairpins were crafted with single pieces of jadeite, coral crystal, or ivory. The variety of styles and patterns of hairpins during the Qing dynasty's rule was unparalleled in previous eras. Combing involved using the large comb to spread the hair over a large area, and then a grate to clean up the hair. Since people in the Qing dynasty did not regularly wash their hair, herbal powders and the grate, a particular hair instrument, were used to clean hair. Flowers, spices, and various Chinese herbal medicines were mixed and ground into a fine powder, sprinkled on the hair, rubbed and massaged, and then removed along with the dirt, using the grate. This ritual effectively cleaned and deodorized the hair. After cleaning the hair, the ladies used the medium crescent comb to comb the bun and the tiny figure eight comb to comb the hair at the tips and sideburns. To tidy up the whole appearance when combing hair, a hair oil made of spiced tea seed oil and hairspray of nanmu wood shavings soaked in water were used. Nanmu wood comes from several tree species unique to China and South Asia, the most valued being from the genus Phoebe. The golden nanmu, or the emperor's wood, is one of the most expensive woods in the world due to the presence of golden-coloured wooden strands in the wood. Tea seed oil, or camellia oil, is reputed as a skin and hair elixir. Traditionally, it was extracted after hand-pounding the seeds into a fine powder, roasting or steaming the powder, and then preparing tea seed powder cakes by hand. The beautiful golden oil was then extracted by cold pressing the cakes. The horse-drawn carriage rolled jerkily towards the canals where the dragon boat races were to start. Inspired by the Victorian carriages of the era, the interiors were embellished with beautifully painted panels of landscapes and flowers, while the upholstery was of intricately patterned brocade. Qing Shi was surprised at how she still missed the motion of a ship at sea. Gentle bobs on a seemingly calm ocean, or the violent tossing about in a raging storm. She belonged to the endless waters. "What's the holdup?" she asked the coachman as the carriage came to a shaky stop. "A wedding procession, Madame Shi. It shouldn't be long before we continue our journey." Parting the curtains on her window, she peered at a wedding sedan carrying a pretty bride, all dressed in red. She smiled wistfully. Like any other young girl, she had dreamt of a grand wedding, hoping some nobleman or high-ranking official would take a fancy to her, a dream of all the pleasure boat girls, their only escape from a life of servitude. Instead, Zheng Yi, the mighty Red Flag pirate fleet commander, fell in love with her and proposed marriage. She had spotted her opportunity in his infatuation, asking for 50% of his monetary gains and partial control of the fleet. Under their joint command, the fleet grew from 200 to 1,800 ships. "Ah, I hope the pretty bride knows not to be just eye candy for her husband. A smart head on her shoulders will serve her well," she remarked loudly. She couldn't help admiring the youthfulness of the girl, her beautifully done-up face and hair. She also knew that a woman should know how to look out for herself, because the beauty would fade one day. She had been that girl once, a lifetime ago, it seemed. She recalled her wedding, beautifying herself, the rituals, the celebrations, all aboard their junk. She had never felt wealthier or prettier. China's natural skincare and wellness heritage have many rituals and recipes based on traditional Chinese medicine systems, primarily based on the yin-yang theory of balance, opposite and interdependent aspects of life. When energy flows harmoniously, blood is sufficient, the body's mineral reserves are adequate, and our spirit is calm and serene, one achieves radiant, well-moisturized, and firm skin. Imbalances of energy lead to the skin turning pale, losing its elasticity, and the first wrinkles appear. Women in ancient China depended on various herbs and roots to keep their skin looking radiant. Applied topically and ingested as herbal tea, these herbs address multiple skin concerns and enhance natural beauty. For example, goji and chrysanthemum tea was taken to detox and boost the skin's defense system. Safflower oil is one of traditional Chinese medicine's primary 50 ingredients. Rich in linoleic acid and vitamins K and E, safflower seed oil minimizes irritation in skin prone to rosacea and redness. It also has established anti-aging properties. One can find hundreds of recipes with natural botanicals and minerals in historical texts and records from ancient China. Women used rice water to remove any residue and brighten the facial skin. Bath beans, a bar-shaped product made of soybean powder, medicinal herbs, scented dried herbs and flowers, was used as soap. Later, as soap-making processes matured, plant ash replaced soybean paste with the addition of animal fat. A paste of rice powder applied on the face was popular for imparting a glow to the skin, and when mixed with a red dye, also worked as rouge. High-quality rice was meticulously selected, soaked, fermented, cleaned, and dried before being ground into fine powder. Another popular recipe amongst royalty was the gentle application of pearl powder onto one's face, to give the skin a healthier and more beautiful look. Ground mung bean paste was also an effective mask to remedy acne and de-puffing. Historical records note that during the 16th to 11th century BC, the juice of the honglan flower was thickened and used for making blush. This cosmetic was applied for a peach blossom makeup look. Records indicate a large volume of pharmaceutical formulas with floral ingredients. For instance, one could brighten the skin with a mixture of plum, pear, cherry, candy tuft, white lotus, red lotus, inula flowers, peach and papaya flowers, clove and pepper, pearl and jade crumbs, Sichuan spray flowers, and ground soybean powder. Traditional Chinese medicine extols the virtues of extracts from peonies and ginkgo biloba plants, especially for their anti-aging properties. Peonies are reputed for smoothening the skin and reducing the appearance of fine lines and wrinkles. Similarly, ginkgo biloba leaf extract is established as a free radical destroyer, enhancing the appearance of dull, mature skin with its powerful antioxidant properties. Floral hydrosols with essential oils and ingredients from flowers were also used as a skincare product and perfume. Qing Shi could hear the sound of drum beats beating up a festive frenzy as they neared their destination. She soon came upon the sight of intricately carved canoes and boats, flamboyantly dressed up with colourful flags, fiercely painted dragons, and teams ready to race. As she stepped out of her carriage, assisted by the coachman, the tempting fragrance of traditional rice dumplings, her favourite being the one with the red bean paste filling, wafted in from the food stalls. She could also smell the sweet, sticky fried cakes made of wheat and rice flour. Gaily dressed visitors bustled around her, the excitement of the race palpable in the air. they carried dainty little perfume pouches, part tradition of the dragon race, part practicality, as the aroma of the herbs and spices in the little bags helped the wearer smell good, repelled insects, and warded off evil spirits. Chants of supporters rooting for their teams reverberated from near the boats. Ching felt the vibrancy of the spectacle down to her soul. But much more than commonplace festivities, her soul craved power. After her husband died, she ruled the South China Sea by ensuring loyalty from her fleet and men, leading them with an iron fist. She had put a code of ethics in place, and any disregard could cost a man his life or limb. She also knew treachery firsthand. It was the surrender of her ally, the Black Flag Fleet's commander, that left her with no choice but to surrender to the government as well, but not before she had negotiated the terms of surrender to meet her ambitions. Ching Shi had surrendered her fleet and men in exchange for a full pardon and on the condition that she kept all her wealth and her men got jobs with the government. With a plan for the future secured, she retired to Macau and set up her gambling business. She could be down, but not out. The man walking towards her now was the one whose title she would soon own. "Your Honor, we meet after so long. I await your visit to the mansion soon," Ching Shi spoke, acknowledging the provincial governor with a slight bow. Oh yes, he would be visiting her soon enough, Ching Shi thought with a contemptuous smile playing on her lips. "Madame Shi, as radiant as ever and just as charismatic, I must say," greeted the governor admiringly. "She looks as ravishing today as she did when she surrendered," he thought to himself. "Perfectly done-up face, radiant skin, silken hair twisted in a beautiful hairstyle. She was a beauty." Ching Shi had a long-standing reputation of being a great beauty, with intelligence to match. She was as skilled in the art of makeup as in the art of war. The governor and Ching Shi went back a long way when he oversaw her surrender on the emperor's behalf. She still smarted at the memory, but managed a little forced civility. "You did get away with it all, Madame Shi," laughingly exclaimed the governor. He admired her fiery spirit, but he had relished his hour of victory at her surrender. "Oh, I haven't, governor, not with it all, but soon I shall." Her eyes bored into him, a cryptic smile playing on her lips. In the meantime, the governor's secretary was making his way to her mansion with pieces of damning evidence. The art of makeup in China has a history dating back to 3000 BC. Its makeup heritage is rich, with varied styles of doing up the face that reflected the preferences of the ruling dynasty of the time. Most makeup trends started at the imperial palace, with concubines experimenting with looks that kept them alluring and in the emperor's favour. Historically, cosmetics were made with pure natural plant and animal oils and some natural spices. The general production process included boiling, fermentation, filtration, etc., a manual, laborious process compared with modern cosmetics production methods. A variety of styles for painting the eyebrows and lips and putting on rouge or blush were popular over centuries. Hairstyling also changed continually. Unlike the previous ones, women's makeup of the Qing dynasty was subtle and restrained, with an elegant and simple aesthetic. Eyebrows were slender and curved like a crescent moon, with women from higher status drawing the eyebrow arch taller. The earliest eyebrow pencils used then were burnt willow branches. Eventually, eyebrow powder or dye was made by grinding a dark blue mineral on an inkstone into powder. Eye makeup was light and soft. The application of rouge was less dramatic, and a light flush of pink was the preference. Blush was made with botanical pigments from crushed and treated safflower or rose petals, with essential oil from osmanthus, overall making for a healthy, natural look. The Chinese prized the colour red, because it was associated with life, energy, and luck. As a result, the color was often applied to one's lips and cheeks to bring about a more youthful and vibrant appearance. Women painted their lips crimson only in the middle of the lower lip. Sometimes, the center of both lips would be dotted. The pigment derived from flowers was occasionally mixed with spices like clove and essential oils for a beautiful fragrance. Though lip balms and rouge were the popular techniques for coloring lips, one unique Chinese cosmetic item was lipstick paper, created by dyeing paper pulp with the pigments of flowers. To use, one would need to press the paper between one's lips, and voila, beautifully colored lips. The dragon boat she had bet on lived up to its reputation by winning the race. She liked that. Winning came easily to her, whether as a pirate commander or when she finally surrendered to the Qing Emperor in 1810. She had been able to negotiate freedom for herself and her crew. Watching the dragon boats reach the finish line and the frenzy of celebrations building up, she recalled her own crew's roars of victory as they sank the last of the Portuguese ships. By 1809, her fleet, along with other pirate allies, was double the size of the combined forces of England and Spain at the time of the Great Sea Battle of the Armada. However, in January of 1810, with tempting terms of surrender from the Chinese government, the different pirate groups began surrendering, one squadron at a time. Within 3 weeks, 9,000 pirates had laid down their arms, including Qing Shi and her fleet. Just then, Qing Shi learned of the secretary's visit from her assistant. She understood that his mission had been a success. The incriminating proof of the governor's corrupt dealings was now laying on her table in the office. She could taste sweet victory. "I will take your leave now, Governor, with a promise of your visit soon. You will not be disappointed." Qing Shi looked coquettishly at the governor, bowing ever so slightly. She played him like a cat with a mouse. Back at her mansion, she looked forward to resting and relaxing in her chambers now. As she sat at the dressing table in her boudoir, Zhu removed the hair jewellery and gently undid the hair. She then took some herb-infused sesame seed oil to remove the makeup. "The day has been tiring. Too many memories and responsibilities surround me. I need to let go a bit." Qing Shi sighed as she closed her eyes. Bringing out the box of smooth white jade stones, Zhu started to gently massage her face and neck with them, expertly going over her tense face and neck muscles. Qing Shi let out a sigh, surrendering once more, this time to the stones' healing energies. She would soon soak in the warm, fragrant bath prepared for her, therapeutically enhanced with roots, chrysanthemums, peppers, and ginger. While traditional Chinese medicine advocated various herbs, minerals, flowers, and animal products in beauty recipes, it also advised healing stones for beauty rituals. The Gua Sha face sculpting tool and the popular jade rollers of today have their roots in China. Stones like rose quartz and green jade are reputed to have cooling, soothing, and energizing properties when used to massage the face and neck in a prescribed manner. The idea is that wrinkles, age spots, and broken blood vessels often come from toxic heat under the skin. So the more cooling the material, the better to help clear the heat. Gua Sha was first documented in writing in the Yuan Dynasty. According to history, farmers thousands of years ago found that gently dragging a piece of china or a coin over a sunburn would help alleviate it. People also used Chinese soup spoons to perform Gua Sha. It's still used today in traditional Chinese medicine to help release pain and increase circulation and energy flow. Facial Gua Sha is said to promote blood circulation, aid lymphatic drainage, and boost collagen and elastin to keep the facial muscles and skin supple and smooth. a gua sha tool made of rose quartz or jade or bian stone, is then scraped gently over the face that has been prepped with a facial oil like almond oil, argan oil, or jojoba oil, in specifically prescribed directions to depuff, lift, and tone the face. A few years ago, its predecessor, the jade roller, was made famous. A roller is a massage tool for relaxation, made with similar cooling stones as the gua sha stone. Amongst these stones was the white jade, or the stone of eternal youth, used by the Chinese emperors for over a millennium. Renowned for its anti-aging and relaxing properties, it is a favored healing stone in ancient Chinese beauty traditions. The earliest written reference to Chinese bath culture was recorded some 3,000 years ago. By 1700 BC, during the Shang Dynasty, bathtubs were usually made with bronze or timber, and by the 18th century, the nobility had private bathrooms, while the common man visited the many public bathhouses. Noble women often scented their bathwater with infusions of therapeutic herbs and flowers. The governor has arrived at the mansion, madam, Ching Shi's assistant gently informed her the following day. She had been waiting, and now it was time to make her final move. She arose from her bureau, the seat of her expanding clout in business and the government, and made her way to the visitor hall. The governor sat there, looking equal parts shocked and distraught. He had underestimated Ching Shi's ambition and ruthlessness. "Madame Shi, please, I shall be thrown to the gallows," begged the terrified governor, beads of sweat running down his face. "Please don't let the palace know." He was now trembling. Ching Shi looked at him, her eyes cold and calculating. The governor had access to ministers in the palace, and it would be an excellent position to be in once she tired of being the governor. "On one condition, governor," she said softly. "You will sign over your title to me. And once I am governor, we will put to good use your closeness with the palace ministers." Now, she truly would get away with it all.
This was an episode of Beauty Rituals Through the Centuries from Officine Universelle Bully. You will soon find a new story that will take you on a journey through time. Our podcasts are available on all listening platforms.